Hi, it's Donna Hudson again, and we're going to pick up with part two of the August 10th Decatur Herald in Review. The reading is continuing we're going to pick up with where we left off in the article on munition supplies being low. Mark F. Kansian, the lead author of the analysis, estimated that the U.S.'s remaining inventory could be exhausted if the war drags on for several more months. For a war against Iran, we could continue for some time, for months, Kansian said. But my suspicion is the Joint Chiefs of Staff sees us at a danger point for conflict with China where we'd need all these missiles, and that's why we'd call this a window of vulnerability. United States' missile stockpile estimates are based on missile procurement numbers in federal budget documents compared against public disclosures regarding their use in the war, experts said. U.S. missile shortages are already becoming a factor in Ukraine's war against Russia. Ukraine is one of several American allies that rely on U.S.-made systems for defense. On Thursday, Trump blamed some of the stockpile depletion on Ukraine. The U.S. gave the country about 600 defense missiles since Russia invaded in 2022. President Volodymyr Zelensky warned August 1st that the country was out of Patriot missiles. And that same day, Ukrainian air defenses were able to stop just one out of 27 Russian attack missiles. Other allies who could be affected by the shortage include Japan and Taiwan, as well as the Gulf states fighting off Iranian attacks. If the fighting starts up again and the Iranians keep firing missiles at the Gulf states, then they'll be screaming for additional missiles, Kansian said. Refilling the U.S. missile stockpile will take years due to manufacturing constraints, a handful of experts have said. Now we'll move on to a brief look at the Decatur four-day forecast. For today, Monday, August 10th, humid, a p.m. thunderstorm, high of 88. Tonight, humid with a thunderstorm, low of 74. On Tuesday, we have a shower and a thunderstorm with a high of 91 and a low of 73. Wednesday, a couple of thunderstorms with a high of 90 and a low of 71. And Thursday, humid with a thunderstorm, high of 81, low of 76. Today's comfort index says the UV index today will be at a high of 8, while today's air quality will be good. We're moving on now to the Nation and World page. Headline, Iran, deal depends on U.S. President Trump says we are only semi-negotiating with them. This article was written by Nayara Abdallah, Steve Holland, and Anas Alashray from Reuters. Dateline, Dubai. Iran said it was nearing a final pact with Oman, defining new shipping lanes between them through the Strait of Hormuz, but repeated that the U.S. must meet other conditions, including compensation and an end to sanctions and military threats, before the strategic waterway is reopened. A U.S. official told Reuters on Friday that Iran and Oman were close to a deal that could pave the way for restoring safe passage through the strait, a major conduit for oil and gas shipping, before Iran blocked Hormuz in response to U.S. and Israeli attacks on Tehran that began in late February. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said Sunday an agreement with Oman on the strait was in its final stages, but reiterated comments made on Saturday that Tehran would not open the channel unless the U.S. met certain demands made by Tehran. The deal with Iran would set out the new shipping lanes to be used once the U.S. fulfills those conditions and the strait is reopened, Iran's Mehr news agency quoted him as saying. Iran and the U.S. are not engaged in direct talks, and Tehran will not start them as long as Washington breaches an interim deal signed in June, Araghchi said, adding that messages were being exchanged through intermediaries. U.S. President Donald Trump said in an interview with Axios that the U.S. was low-keying it with Iran. We are only semi-negotiating with them. We're just watching Iran with its huge inflation and the fact that they have no money. Araghchi said reopening the strait would depend in part on the U.S. paying compensation for damage it caused in widespread attacks on Iran. the secretary of Iran's top national security body, Mohammad Bakir Zolkadar, also listed ending further U.S. threats against Iran, halting aggression toward Iran and its Lebanese, Palestinian, Yemeni, and Iraqi allies, removing a U.S. naval blockade in the Gulf, lifting sanctions on Iran, and releasing frozen Iranian assets. The United States and Israel launched airstrikes on Iran more than 5 months ago. Trump has said the attacks were aimed at keeping the Islamic Republic from developing nuclear weapons and degrading its ability to threaten the region. Washington and Tehran agreed to a ceasefire in June, but the U.S. reimposed a blockade on Iranian shipping in the Gulf in July, a move that Tehran said violated the truce, which by then had broken down. Once the deal is announced to restore commercial shipping without impediments, the United States will lift the blockade of Iranian ports, a U.S. official said. U.S. actions would be tied to Iran's implementation of its commitments, the official said. The U.S. comments indicated a delicate sequencing toward a deal that sources had told Reuters appeared to be set to give Tehran control over vessel traffic entering the Gulf through the strait, which shippers have said was not easily workable. Our next article is entitled, Russian City Attacked, Six Killed. Kremlin's forces take over two villages in eastern Donetsk region. This article has a Reuters byline. Six people died in a Ukrainian overnight drone attack on the Russian city of Belgorod, the regional crisis center said Sunday. Alexander Shuvayev, the acting governor of Belgorod region, earlier said three people were killed and 25 others, including two children, were injured. The death toll later rose to six after officials said emergency crews combed an apartment building that was set ablaze. Shuvayev said the attack sparked fires in two apartment buildings and a large number of residential and non-residential buildings were damaged. Russia's defense ministry said it destroyed more than 150 Ukrainian drones over the European part of the country, as well as over Crimea, the Black Sea, and the Sea of Azov. In Novorossiysk, a major Russian export port on the Black Sea, drone debris fell on two facilities, local mayor Andrei Kravchenko said, without identifying the sites. The local crisis center later said three residential buildings were damaged and one person was injured. In Bashkortostan region, a Ukrainian drone struck a building under construction and a crane in the city of Ufa, a state-run RIA news agency reported, citing local emergency services. Also on Sunday, Russian forces took control of the two villages in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk region, state-run RIA agency reported, citing the Russian Defense Ministry. The ministry report on Telegram said Russian forces seized Vasutinsky, a few kilometers east of the fortress city of Kramatorsk, and Toretsk, southwest of the city of Druzhkivka. Ukrainian forces made no acknowledgement of the two settlements changing hands, and Reuters could not verify the battlefield reports independently. Russia is slowly advancing westward through the Donetsk region. Russia is slowly advancing westward through the Donetsk region, though there has been little significant change for months in the positions along the 775-mile front line. The Ukrainian war blog Deep State, which uses open-source reports in documenting the frontline positions of both sides, reported that Russian forces made advances near Ilinivka, outside the contested city of Kostiantynivka. It also reported Russian advances near Chaziv Yar, to the west of the city of Bakhmut, which fell to Russian forces in 2023 after long months of heavy fighting. The Ukrainian military's general staff, in a late evening report, said Kyiv's forces repelled 24 attacks around Kostiantynivka, Ilinivka, and other centers. Russian commanders said last month their forces had seized Kostiantynivka, but Ukrainian officials have disputed the claim. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in his nightly video address in his nightly video address Sunday, made no reference to changes in frontline positions, but singled out for praise Ukrainian forces fighting in specific areas, notably Dobropetia, Kostiantynivka, and Kramatorsk. The next article from page 6 is entitled, Shooter's Dad Sentenced to 15 Years, Wants New Trial. This is from the USA Today Network. Colin Gray, the Georgia father convicted after giving his teenage son the rifle used in a deadly high school shooting, is asking for a new trial less than a week after he was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Gray, 55, was convicted in March on 27 charges stemming from the September 4, 2024 shooting at Appalachie High School in Winder, Georgia. Four people were killed, 14-year-old students Mason Schermerhorn and Christian Angulo, and teachers Richard Aspinwall, 39, and Christina Irimi, 53. Gray's attorneys filed a motion Wednesday arguing that the jury's verdict was not supported by the evidence, according to reports from AP and CBS News. They said the verdict was contrary to evidence and strongly against the weight of the evidence, as well as contrary to law and the principles of justice and equity. Prosecutors argued Gray should have recognized the danger posed by his son, Colt Gray, and taken steps to prevent him from accessing firearms. Colin Gray acknowledged during his trial that he gave Colt the semi-automatic rifle as a Christmas present. Prosecutors said he ignored warning signs about his son's mental health and growing interest in school shootings. Months before the shooting, a sheriff's deputy urged Gray to secure his guns after authorities investigated an alleged online threat to commit a school shooting. Officials could not definitively determine whether Colt made the threat. Now we'll move to the Digest, a series of articles from around the world. The first is headlined, Thai Officials, Shooter Watched Violence Online. Dateline Bangkok. The Thai teen behind a deadly school shooting outside Bangkok had an air gun confiscated by a teacher last year and had watched violent content online, police said Sunday, as the government promised new safety protocols for schools. As investigations continued into Friday's rampage, where a 14-year-old boy allegedly shot dead his grandparents at home before killing six more people at his school before turning the gun on himself, police said the boy used social media to learn how to use a firearm. The boy's mother, however, said she'd seen no signs of trouble. He was a bright, cheerful person, she told Reuters. Next short article is entitled, Canada to Help BC as Wildfire Spreads. Dateline Toronto. The Canadian federal government said Sunday it will assist British Columbia as raging wildfires forced thousands of people to evacuate by providing shelter and accommodation for residents displaced in regions around Summerland and Peachland. The Bald Range wildfire, which prompted British Columbia to declare a provincial state of emergency and evacuate about 18,000 people, spread to more than 25,000 acres by Saturday night as firefighters continued to battle the blaze. Over the past 24 hours, southern British Columbia continued to see fires spreading due to hot and dry weather, the province's wildfire service said. We continue with a series of very brief articles. Dateline New Delhi. The captain of an Air India flight from Phuket to New Delhi that encountered a sudden loss of altitude last week returned an initial screening result for psychoactive substances, prompting further laboratory testing, India's Civil Aviation Ministry said Sunday. Russian bases. Syria and Russia reached a memorandum of understanding to settle the future of Russian bases at Tartus and Hmeymim. Following 18 months of intensive negotiations, the Syrian Foreign Ministry said Sunday, according to the Syrian state news agency. The ministry said the Syrian state would take over management of civilian facilities, including Hmeymim Airport and the commercial berth at Tartus Port. Houthis. Yemen's Iran-aligned Houthis attacked Saudi Aramco's Jazan refinery, they said Sunday, 2 days after the kingdom signed a defense pact with Turkey and Pakistan in response to growing regional instability from the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. Beijing. Typhoon Dolphin, the most powerful tropical cyclone to hit China this year, made landfall Sunday on the country's eastern coast, bringing torrential rain and strong winds and triggering warnings of flooding and landslides. The typhoon has already swept through Japan's southern Okinawa prefecture, injuring 6 people and cutting power to more than 50,000 buildings. Ireland. Prosecutors in Dublin charged Irish crime gang boss Daniel Kinahan with directing a criminal organization Sunday amid tight security at a special court sitting following his extradition from the United Arab Emirates. Kinahan was arrested in Dubai in April. Defense. Taiwan's cabinet will propose a 16% annual increase in defense spending for 2027, which will for the first time exceed $31 billion, the official central news agency reported Sunday as Taipei bolsters its military. The move will come as China, which views democratically governed Taiwan as its own territory, has ramped up military and political pressure over the past few years to assert its claim. Moving on to page 9, an article here is titled Talc Settlement Reached. This article is by Dietrich Nauth of Reuters. After years of failed attempts to resolve thousands of lawsuits alleging that its talc products caused cancer, Johnson & Johnson says it reached a settlement worth at least $5.5 billion that could finally help end litigation that dogged the company for more than a decade. Tens of thousands of people sued J&J in federal and state courts, alleging the company's talc-based baby powder and other products caused ovarian cancer. J&J long denied that its talc products caused cancer, saying that talc was safe and did not contain asbestos. It argued that decades of scientific testing show its talc products do not contain cancer. Results at trial were mixed. J&J won several cases, but the litigation also produced billions of dollars in verdicts, settlements, and legal costs. J&J said the settlement covers about 76,000 claims, including ones consolidated in federal court in New Jersey and related cases in state court, representing nearly all of the remaining talc claims against the company. J&J said the settlement will move forward only if the deal is accepted by enough people to cover 95% of the estimated ovarian cancer claims. That could happen in a few months, according to a plaintiff's lawyer who supports the deal. J&J previously settled most of the cases alleging its talc contained asbestos and caused mesothelioma. J&J previously tried 3 times to end the talc litigation through bankruptcy. In each case, it created a new subsidiary, transferred talc liabilities to that company, and then placed it into bankruptcy proceedings. Each bankruptcy was tossed out of court. Some plaintiffs' lawyers fiercely opposed the bankruptcies, arguing that a financially healthy company such as J&J should not be able to use bankruptcy protections meant for businesses in financial distress. A bankruptcy settlement, if it had been approved, would have bound people who did not agree to its terms and claims from people who develop cancer in the future. This new settlement does not attempt to bind unwilling participants or people who develop cancer in the future. It is a voluntary process that does not rely on a bankruptcy court's approval. It also will pay claims much faster than the bankruptcy would have. Plaintiffs' lawyers said the new deal will pay claims in full in less than 2 years, whereas the bankruptcy settlement would have paid out claims over the course of 25 years. J&J expects to pay $3 billion in 2027, and it will make further payments in 2028. However, the deal could be worth more, depending on how many people participate in the settlement. Chris Seeger, an attorney who represents about 2,500 clients with talc claims and helped negotiate the settlement, said J&J ultimately could pay $7 billion or more. The settlement assigns specific values to qualifying ovarian cancer claims, but does not cap J&J's total payout, he said. J&J and leading plaintiffs' law firms, including firms that represent large numbers of plaintiffs with ovarian cancer claims and those that negotiated the deal, expressed confidence that this deal will get across the finish line. Some plaintiffs' lawyer firms Some plaintiffs' law firms said they are still reviewing the deal and deciding whether to recommend it to their clients. J&J said plaintiffs are more likely to take the deal after a recent court ruling by a judge overseeing the federal talc cases. That ruling cast doubt on plaintiffs' ability to prove their cases and highlighted tightening standards for the scientific evidence that can be admitted in court. "We got a fair settlement, and our clients are going to be happy with it," Seeger said in an interview. The deal leaves J&J open to litigation from people who may develop ovarian cancer and who decide to sue the company in the future. Ovarian cancer can have a latency period of decades, representing the time gap between when a person is exposed to a harmful substance and when cancer symptoms start or the disease is detected. J&J previously said bankruptcy was the only way to resolve the cases because the company needed certainty about the future claims as well as the current claims. The company said it now believes it will not face another major wave of talc claims after completing this settlement. The company stopped selling talc-based baby powder in the U.S. in 2020, switching to a cornstarch product. Our next article is from page 10. Driver assistance. Many turn to Tesla's self-driving technology to keep their mobility. This article is by Henry Payne of the Detroit News. Consumers, most notably senior citizens, are buying Teslas to self-drive them in cities across the United States. Determined to maintain their individual transportation independence, they use Tesla's hands-free full self-driving, or FSD, system as a driver assist as their confidence and reflexes and eyesight deteriorate. "It's as good a driver as I am," said Dick Amaker, 78, a retired General Motors engineer from Rochester Hills, Michigan. According to FSD data, he drives his Model Y and Model 3 on FSD 98% of the time. "Here's the thing, it will not go through a red light. It will not go through a stop sign. Every once in a while, I've driven through neighborhoods where stop signs were partially obscured by low-hanging branches, for example, and the Tesla sees them before I do." Tesla's FSD software made enormous strides in the last 2 years thanks to millions of miles of real-world customer use and artificial intelligence advancement. Tesla self-driving enables safer mobility for senior citizens, CEO Elon Musk posted July 11th on social media in response to a Tesla post documenting how FSD changed some seniors' lives. Leonard Krauss, 92, bought a red Tesla Model 3 in 2021, and it drives him on his daily routine. He's watched FSD steadily improve with over-the-air updates. He even recommended Tesla FSD to his 95-year-old brother-in-law. "I don't think I would be driving without it," Krauss said. "This is the promise of autonomous driving, because people do not want to give up their personal mobility," Autoline auto analyst John McElroy said. "It opens mobility for everybody, every segment of society, not just the elderly, but even the young. Anybody with any disability, potentially when we get to level 4, even the blind will be able to go places. With people in their 70s, 80s, 90s, especially when driving at night, there is a guardian angel looking over their shoulder." So-called level 4 autonomy in rideshare robo-taxis, for example, is when the car has complete control. Tesla's FSD is level 2, hands-free system that requires a driver behind the wheel. Amaker likes to take long road trips in his Model Y to Florida and northern Michigan. He finds FSD makes the correct choices, even in challenging conditions. "Roundabouts are perfect," he said. "There was a roundabout in Venice, Florida, people call the Circle of Death. Since FSD version 14, it's so good in roundabouts, some place where many average drivers fail, especially an elderly driver. FSD waits until there's a good spot to get into a roundabout. It stays in its lane and takes it through." On one of Amaker's outings into Detroit, FSD exited the expressway near Wayne State. All of a sudden, the Tesla pulls over to the curb. "I'm like, what is going on?" he said. Turns out there was an emergency vehicle coming from behind. FSD saw that it was an emergency vehicle before I did. It has vision in every direction simultaneously. A human being cannot replicate that. FSD doesn't recognize handicap spots, and that's wrong, he said, thinking of FSD blind spots. It has a habit of picking a safe place to park, but we're being critical on details of something that we wouldn't have dreamed even possible just 5 years ago. Jack Christian, 95, of Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, asked me to give him a ride in my Model 3 around his neighborhood. I never touched the wheel. The Tesla delivered us to each address flawlessly in midday traffic. Christian quickly got comfortable as the car followed traffic laws. McElroy said he took the keys away from his father a few years ago. Now he would be comfortable if his father used FSD, which Tesla offers as a subscription for $99 a month. Tesla claims, and I believe them, at the current level it's safer than human driving, said McElroy, who has driven extensively with FSD. I'm not sure everything's ever going to be perfect. I have no question that autonomy, once it's widespread, is going to save tens of thousands of lives a year. Amaker and Krauss are quick to note FSD is not perfect. Drivers need to be engaged and occasionally intervene. Krauss, who owns a construction company and makes regular trips to work sites, takes over from FSD in his neighborhood to navigate speed bumps. The Tesla slows down to 20 to 23 miles per hour over the speed bumps, and it's still too fast, so I just take over, he said. He recommends elderly drivers interested in Tesla FSD take rides with family and friends first to learn the system's details. McElroy also recommends government regulation. There should be a driver's test for FSD or any autonomous system, especially in how well it works when it encounters other autonomous cars. We need some sort of industry standard, he said. Moving to page 11, we will look at Today in History from USA Today Network. Monday, August 10th, 1793. France's revolutionary government opened the Musée Central des Arts in a former royal residence called the Louvre. Its collection began with 537 paintings. On this day in 1821, Missouri became the nation's 24th state. And on this day in 1846, Congress established the Smithsonian Institution to administer the $500,000 plus bequest of British scientist James Smithson. On this day in 1897, Felix Hoffmann, a German chemist working for Bayer, successfully synthesized a pure, stable form of acetylsalicylic acid, better known as aspirin. On this day in 1937, the U.S. Patent Office granted the first patent for an electric guitar to G.D. Beauchamp of the Electro String Instrument Corp. On this day in 1945, Japan proposed to accept the World War II surrender terms of the Potsdam Declaration on the condition that the emperor be allowed to remain the country's nominal head of state. On this day in 1960, the U.S. Navy launched the experimental Discoverer 13 satellite in the Pacific north of Hawaii. On this date in 1977, serial killer Son of Sam, David Berkowitz, was arrested in New York. He pleaded guilty to murdering six people and was sentenced to 365 years in prison. On this day in 1993, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was sworn in as an Associate Supreme Court Justice. She was the 107th Justice and second woman to serve. From the horoscope section, happy birthday from Monday, August 10th, 2026. If today is your birthday, you are self-assured and have strong opinions. You think incisively, logically, and like to share your views. This is a year of new beginnings, adventures, and major changes in your life. What you do now will bring great benefits in the future. This has been Donna Hudson with the Decatur Herald and Review for Monday, August 10th, 2026. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.